The Gaily Planet, The Final Frontier. These are the voyages of Lark and Jesse. Our continuing mission, to provide you with humorous yet ruthless analysis, to seek out queer takes and explore every gay subtext, to boldly say what no one has said before. Hello, and welcome to The Gaily Planet, a podcast where two queer nerds talk about Star Trek The Next Generation. I am Lark Malachi Gray.
And I am Jesse Blount, and today we're talking about episode 5 of season 1, The Last Outpost.
We sure are. And, you know, reminder, all of our episodes are longer on Patreon, and we couldn't do this without our patrons. So if you are a patron, thank you. And if you want to help keep this, you know, my full-time job, consider joining us there. Or, and leave us a 5-star written review or update your review to reflect our changed subject matter and to express that you still like it. That's good too.
Yeah, leaving us a review is a monetarily free way of supporting us. It helps people find our podcast, and we read every review, and it's really nice.
Yeah, it is. There's also a bunch of other ways to support us. We have merch. You can join our sticker club. You can donate a sticker club design. You can help us with transcripts. It's all in the show notes. And, you know, with that, I'm going to cut in my summary. Okay, so if you would like to skip my summary, go ahead and skip forward about 2.5 minutes starting now. So in this relatively uneventful episode, the Enterprise is chasing down a Ferengi ship because the Ferengi stole an energy converter that belongs to the Federation, when suddenly both ships experience major power drains and they both think that the other one is doing the power draining, but then eventually realize that that's not what's happening. It's actually the planet that they're above that has somehow captured both of their ships and is both rifling through their databases and also draining all the power, including life support. So they have a meeting where Data is like, I think it's this civilization called the Takan Empire that actually stopped existing like many hundreds of thousands of years ago. And also some kids were recently in the briefing room and they left one of those little finger puzzle things that you get as a prize at like an arcade. And Data gets stuck in it, which will become relevant later on and also is like the best part of the episode. So they decide to do like friendship making with the Ferengi, who they've never really interacted with before, by doing an away mission down to the planet together to figure out what's going on and hopefully free their ships before everyone dies of hypothermia or lack of oxygen. I'm not sure which one would happen first. Anyway, so Riker and Geordi and Data beam down to the planet, as do 3 Ferengi. And the Ferengi are like, oh, we're actually gonna like kill you. And then the AI interface that was left behind by this civilization, who goes by the name of Portal 63, shows up and is like, I think that you're all uncivilized and bad and I'm gonna kill all of you. And then Riker is like, but I can quote the Art of War. And Portal 63 is like, that is super impressive. You seem fine. I won't kill you. Do you want me to kill these Ferengi for you? And Riker's like, no, thanks though. And so Portal 63 frees all of the ships and life support comes back and everyone's not going to freeze to death and or die of asphyxiation. And the Ferengi return the energy converter that they stole, and Riker is like, I love a prank. And so he sends their new frenemies a box of the finger traps as a quote-unquote thank you for returning the energy converter. The end. Welcome to the front page, where we talk about everything that doesn't go anywhere else.
My first thought is that the angle that we see of this Ferengi ship makes it look like a mushroom, like a mushroom cap.
Yeah, it does. trying to figure out what it was. I was like, this, it feels very organic. I can't quite put my finger on it. You are completely correct. That's it.
Yeah. That's my first thing.
So I didn't realize it until I was like organizing my notes, but like my first three front page notes are Yar is so horny for Photon Torpedoes. Why is Riker so horny for Yankee Traders? And Geordi is so horny for engineering. And so I feel like we're getting a lot from everybody here.
Everyone is so enthusiastic about things in this episode. It is a very weirdly high energy for an episode where honestly not a lot happens.
Yeah, totally. But we're all like, everyone's showing up ready to go, you know?
Yeah. Speaking about this sort of first like 10 minutes of this episode, okay, this is gonna sound so weird. I love that at least the way this episode is shot, when like Picard and Riker on the bridge, it really emphasizes that like Riker's like a foot taller than Picard.
I actually looked it up. He is only 4 inches taller than him.
Okay, I don't know. Like,
yes, agreed, obviously, by the fact that I was like, how tall are these people?
it's a very weird angle, but I appreciate it because I feel like oftentimes, sometimes you watch a thing and it's like they're trying to pretend that there isn't a giant. If there isn't a real, like, oh, this person is legitimately a foot and a half taller than this other person, usually they won't, they usually won't show it if it's two dudes.
Right.
And so I was just like, this feels refreshing.
Yeah. Okay, so I was laughing so hard when Picard is like sending the message to the Ferengi ship. He's just like an old man on speakerphone. You're just like, you don't actually have to yell. Like, your speaker is still working the same as if you're holding your phone next to your face. Like, why are you shouting?
It was so weird and also so funny. I feel like I wonder if part of it is that because IRL video calls like didn't exist in real life, it's sort of like, how do I act if I'm having this video chat in a starship?
It's just funny because he doesn't yell when they're on screen with other people. It's like at the point where they're actually talking, he's just talking. But when he's leaving the message, he's shouting. And I don't know why, but that just felt like very old man doesn't know how to use technology to me.
No, that's fair. It is such a specific thing.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay, so I feel like we should have like a special segment for Picard Encounters Child.
Oh my god. I feel like I thought you were going to mention about how Picard is very French, but this is even more funny.
Oh my god. When, like, Riker's panic that he is not able to get those two kids out of the why are they there? Anyway, but he's just like, like, out. And Picard just, like, glares as they run past, and Riker's like,
That is the only reason those children are there is because of that, I am convinced. And I'm like,
oh, yeah.
It's so unnecessary for this episode, but it's also deeply funny.
Yeah, they're just, like, really leaning into this. Like, this is the one piece of, like, personal growth that Picard will go through over the course of this series is learning to hate children a little bit less.
Yeah. What a weirdo. I'm sorry. I have to talk about the other thing that we get a lot, which is Picard talking about like flag colors. And it's like, oh, yeah, the Americans, nothing like the Astur French or whatever ridiculous shit he said. And it's like, we get it. You're very French, even though the nation of France is the however Earth countries are being divvied up in this, you know, Star Trek world. All under one government, whatever. But it's just deeply funny to me.
It's really funny.
It's like, okay, yeah, we get it.
It's like, they're like, I know in the last episode we had to like canonically say that French is a dead language to explain why Picard is British. So in this episode, we're going to just reiterate, though, that he is French. So we're just like covering all the ground to like make everyone understand why his name is Jean-Luc Picard, even though he's British. Cool. Everyone with us? Good, good. And we're like, okay. I'm not sure this matters as much as you think it does.
I like really hope because, as I've mentioned before, maybe, Star Trek invented modern fandom, fan fiction, shipping. It's all originated. So many weird sexual fan fiction tropes, which I think I will get into a little bit today because I guess Gene Roddenberry was a bit of a freak. But...
Tone tag, affectionate listeners.
Yes, in the most affectionate way. So I'm assuming that some Star Trek fan has explained, I'm sure the current Star Trek geopolitical climate of England and France as it exists for Jean-Luc to have a British accent, but still have a very strong French.
Well, I mean, I think that was the entire point in the last episode of them saying that French is a dead language was so that we wouldn't need to think about this anymore. Like, I cannot think of another reason that they would have French be a dead language aside from being like, this is why he's not French, because they unsuccessfully tried to get Patrick Stewart to do a French accent.
Yeah. Which, I mean, again, I feel like some fan has overthought this and I just... I'm going to look for that if it exists, and if not, it should.
That also seems like the kind of thing that might actually have been, like, covered in a canonical Star Trek novel, too. So I would be curious to know if there's something on, like, Memory Alpha that's like, oh, yeah, according to this, you know, novel or comic book or something, here's what happened to cause French to become a dead language. Someone was like, what's up with all these vowels? This is too silly. We have to be done. And everyone else was like, we agree with that. Too many vowels. So
along these lines, we have Data going through the variety of random flags of countries that don't exist anymore. And all I could think about is like Data mentally going through, you know how like, you know, when you're like, at the back of all your emojis are all the flags. I'm just like, does he just have like a built-in like old emoji database that's just like all of the flag emojis that he's just like reciting from?
I also had the mental image of the flag emoji profile because I was like, you know, when you go in there and you're like, how many of these can I actually identify what country they belong to? And it's like, I don't know, maybe 12. I was like, oh, Data never has that problem.
I mean, there are so many that are just like stripes of the same varying degrees of five different colors, which is just like, doesn't help.
Yeah, I did see when I was looking up, like, what the fuck is a Yankee traitor, that apparently there's a New England flag that is just, it's just like solid red with a box in the upper corner, like where the US flag has the stars, but it's just like, a white square with a green pine tree in it. And that's like officially the New England flag. And I was like, more people should just have like a little tiny forest as a flag. That's cute.
Yeah, truly. Yeah, I think the Lebanese flag has a tree in the middle of it, which is why I remember it.
Right, exactly. Okay, so yeah, my last thing here is the like truly bizarre scene where they're on this planet and Riker and Data find Geordi and he's upside down and the conversation that they have is so fucking weird because like I don't know. Okay, so listeners, if you didn't watch it, Riker's like, Geordi, are you conscious? And Geordi's like, do I look conscious? And Riker's like, what are you doing? And Geordi's like, I materialized, he's like, I'm resting. And then he's like, I materialized upside down above the planet's surface. My foot is stuck. And I'm like, are we listening to an audio drama? Like, we
can see.
Yes. Like, that is abundantly clear. What the fuck is this?
This is definitely a, like, this is the early part of season one. They don't know how to write for Geordi's character because he's like, it's very all over. I think.
But why is he describing?
I have Your guess is as good as mine.
I am so confused because it sounds like when you turn on like the audio descriptions for a show, like I don't know if you've ever watched a show where like you have the person like describing the scene for someone who can't see the screen. Like it sounds like what that would be doing, like the work that that would be doing. But like, why is that just in the dialogue of the script?
I don't know. They had to pad it out somehow because, again, not a lot happens in this. I don't know. It is real weird.
It's so weird.
All right. I just have a couple more things.
Okay.
Which is Data and this finger trap is the funniest part of this episode.
It's so good.
Honestly, like, it's not only the funniest part, but maybe kind of the most interesting part, like the most interesting thing to watch on television for this episode, because it's like Data's giving his pretty boring exposition while he's struggling with this like white and neon pink finger trap.
Oh my god, it's so good. And it's really our first look at the like absolute gift that is Brent Spiner.
Brent Spiner? Spiner?
I think there's only one N, but I don't know how you say it. The actor who plays Data, like the delivery of this physical joke is just, yeah, top tier.
Yeah, it is really, it's A plus character building and exposition giving.
Yeah.
A plus.
I don't think that counts as exposition when you're delivering information. I think it's only exposition if it's information that is being like restated or like to sum up something that happened off screen, but this is like we're learning a thing together. I think he's giving information.
Fair.
Welcome to Community Profiles, where we talk about character development. I have a lot of feelings about Data in this cool episode. So actually a lot of the stuff that you were talking about earlier with like the flags and stuff like that, I feel like, I don't know, that whole scene, like we sort of start off with, you know, Data's like, the Ferengi have technology that's like, you know, assumed to be relatively equal or generally equal to ours. And Picard is like, but not necessarily identical. And Data's like, yes, that is literally what generally equal means. Like the look on his face being like, correct, Captain. You got yeah it, buddy. And then everyone's like so annoyed with him from like there on out. And like, I don't know, when Picard goes on his little like, ah, oh, but France was blue, white, and red and whatever. And Data's like, cool, we're talking about flags now. Like, let's talk about flags. And Picard's like, Data, shut the fuck up. We're talking about Ferengis. And I was just like, leave. And Data's literally like, you started it. And Picard's just like, so dismissive. And I was just feeling very defensive on Data's behalf.
I know. Data is following the rest of this conversation. I don't know what you're doing, Picard.
So. Right. It's, I mean, yes, I get that like reciting a list of, you know, flag colors is not super interesting for most people, but you could be like kind about being like, wow, you know a lot of flags or something, instead of just being like, Data, stop it.
Like, I know. It's like, no, you stop it, Picard.
Right, exactly. God, be nice. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, once again, Data scenes remain a joy, especially in this deeply weird episode.
Yeah.
I just have, I think, a little bit about Riker.
Okay.
Who saves the day for being a bit of a nerd and not just a handsome baby face.
Yeah. I think I described it as, like, he's showing that he's, like, not just a himbo, he's also qualified to be first mate. I was like, men really can't have it all.
Yeah, he sure did save the day with his brain today. Mm-hmm. Much to the surprise, I think, not of everyone. But I think he was even just like, okay, this is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. No bloodshed. Excellent.
Yeah, and we get, I assume, this thing where he's like, the Yankee traitors, my people, is another attempt to, like, I don't give us background on this character, which is, like, seems weird. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, given that, like, I had to be like, what the fuck is a Yankee traitor? And then it's, like, kind of nothing. I don't know. I was just like, why are you so excited about this? Like, what the fuck?
Listen, Riker can trace his ancestry back to people throwing tea in the Boston Harbor or whatever the fuck they're trying to insinuate with this.
Yeah. I mean, they're sort of like, what's the opposite of proto? Like, they're like post-pirates, Yankee traders, basically just, you know, doing a bit of light piracy, but like not quite reaching the level of treason.
Yeah, I think I put pirate light in. Yeah. Because I also looked it up and I'm like, this is the thing that you do when you were a pirate, but you're like, I don't want to be murdered by a government. So I'm just going to do some stuff, but also still sell drugs. It's fine. Everything's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is what Frenchie is doing post our Fleck meets death.
And then we also get like his little prank at the end, which I feel like is actually a nice piece of character development, where it's like, yeah, he's like weirdly memorized the art of war, which everyone insists is going to be relevant in the future, despite it not being relevant now to anyone who isn't trying to destroy the world with capitalism. And also he's just like a goofball who's like, lol, let's send these finger traps to our new frenemies.
It is, yeah. It's just like, okay, you also like silly pranks. And, like, I think that it's just like, oh, you're, like, a himbo and a bit of a nerd. And also just, like, what is the word? Not a rake, but just, like, a just mischievous little guy or whatever.
Yeah. That's so accurate. Welcome to the style and fashion section, where we talk about aesthetics, and there's an image roundup for every episode. The link's in the show notes, or you can just go to #ruthless.com/thegailyplanet and you will find it. What do you have first?
So we only see these, I don't know, 8-year-old children who are in the like senior ready room lounge or whatever the fuck you call it for like 3 seconds. But I feel like they're wearing really cute outfits.
I don't remember.
I think it's like, okay, this is from memory. I think it looks like they're both wearing jumpsuits where on the sleeve/edge of the outfit is like a solid blue. And then in the middle, like in a stripe that goes front to back, some kind of weird print.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I was just like, I thought that's a cute outfit.
I think you're correct. It's materializing in my brain now. I mean, we have to talk about the entire aesthetics of the Ferengi, which is gorgeous. Would steal the show at like any queer nightclub today.
I mean, the fur vest, I was kind of like, I'm actually here for this.
Yeah. Fur vest, glitter, and shimmery, like iridescent nail polish that like matches. Come on. It's a really good look.
Yeah, I actually also really like that shade of blue. Apparently it's Ferengi's just like that's just what their nail bed looks like.
No.
Yeah. Okay. I know. But I'm like, whatever shade of blue that is really attractive.
Yeah, no. Vetoed, that's inaccurate, actually.
I was like, I looked this up because I was like, really, you guys? Okay. All right, whatever. I know.
Listeners, I'm just like shaking my head in like exasperation. Just absolutely not. No, they paint their nails a beautiful shade of blue that matches their uniforms is the word I was looking for.
There you go.
Yeah, they look great. What else do you have here?
I only have one more thing, which is this black and neon cloak. The whatever that wizard's name was, whatever that guy.
The portal.
The portal. Yes. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
He's wearing a, it is a black cloak with some like neon green color. Not like splatter, but just a very asymmetrical random slashes of neon green. And I'm like, that's fucking cool. I would wear that.
Yeah. It's very cool. My last thing is just, they use this set a lot, but I think this is the only time that it has giant, beautiful crystals on it. And so, you know, I think we should take a moment to appreciate it at probably its best.
I literally gasped out loud when they were on the planet because I'm like, look at these giant crystals. Yeah. So cool. I'm like, oh. And they're like people-sized crystals, everyone. And I'm just like, that would be so cool to just have in your house.
Yeah. Welcome to the politics section where we talk about things that are fucked up.
Do you want to start? You want me to start?
You can start.
All right. I have things in least fucked up to most fucked up in this episode. And this is only here because it involves drugs. But when Crusher is like, everyone, like, there's, you know, the oxygen and the heat is slowly fading in the ship. And Crusher's like, I feel like I should have given Wesley a, like, sedative so he wouldn't have to suffocate to death, essentially. And Picard's like, no. And Crusher's just like, okay, is this because of masculinity? Because fuck that. And I'm like, you're right, Crusher. If I'm suffocating / freezing death on a starship, give me the good drugs and none of this synthahol bullshit.
Yeah, also, never mind. I'm like, I don't know if that's a true thing or not. I'm like, don't you use less oxygen? Anyway.
If you're unconscious, I feel like
if you're sleeping.
That is also a plot point in episode of Lower Decks.
Okay, so maybe that's where I got that from. So, like, not the most reputable source. It was also such a, like, weird and totally unnecessary, because she's like, what is this, like, a manliness thing? And he's just, like, ridiculous and, like, huffs away. And you're like, what was that? Why?
I know. Yeah, it is. They're really just trying to figure it out. And you can really see in these episodes like this, we're just like, what are you doing with the two of them?
Yeah. So actually, so the only thing that I have here is like talking about the Ferengi. So if you want to go up in ascending order, then you should just keep going until we reach the Ferengi.
Okay, cool. So I have 1.5 points before we get there. Okay. My next thing is yet another episode where Yar is dealing with a like annoying amount of workplace sexual harassment. And I'm like, you know, if this is, like, really common, I see why she's ready to just torpedo the fuck out of everyone. Like, it's just never addressed, because it's the 80s, and I'm like, poor Yar. Like, this, you're just trying to show up and do your fucking job, and then some other aliens are like, a woman! And it's just like, oh, God.
I know. It's like, I guess it feels like what they're doing is being like, we're just using this as, like, a signifier of like whether or not we should respect the aliens that we're interacting with. And it's like, there's got to be other ways, you guys, because it's not been very many episodes and you're like, this is already feeling played out.
Yeah, there isn't even HR for her to go to be like, is there not a Federation policy? Oh, I just have to. Okay, thanks. I just feel very bad for her. So I'm just like, I too would just be constantly ready to phase everyone.
You know, I guess that's fair.
All right. This episode's villain is capitalists, which at first glance is a great villain for your socialist space utopia. And especially if this is being written in the 80s, I mean, greedy, ruthless businessman as villain feels very on the nose. considering 80s greed is what has given rise to 2020's out of control, out of touch, offensive tech billionaires that we're all dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, like, the U.S. was actively engaged in, like, overthrowing communism everywhere because we were so sure that capitalism was better. So this, honestly, it's, like, a miracle that this was allowed to be on during the time period that it was on. So
yeah, and I mean, terrible capitalists as villains, I am here for. I am not here for it like this. And I know that on Deep Space Nine, like, there's a lot of fleshing out of the Ferengis' characters. But this is the first time we're seeing them. This is, like, their first canonical appearance in Star Trek canon. It's real unfortunate.
It is.
Real bad. It's real cringe.
Yes. Yep. It really is. It kind of just, like, gives you, like, full body ick.
Yeah.
In a way that's sort of, like, I think, okay. So, obviously, like, the most common critique of the Ferengi is, like, the anti-Semitic tropes. I found an interesting quote from Armin Shimerman, who's, you know, Mr. Ferengi.
Yeah.
Who's in this episode. He's the person who plays Quark, right, on Deep Space Nine. So he's just, like, been a Ferengi since they existed.
Since this episode in 1987 or whatever the fuck year this came out.
And he's still voicing Ferengi on Lower Decks. Like, he is still Mr. Ferengi. But so he was, like, talking about people's observations of, like, anti-Semitism, sort of dog whistles in the way that the Ferengis are both physically and culturally portrayed. And he was like, in America, people ask, do the Ferengi represent Jews? In England, they ask, do the Ferengi represent the Irish? In Australia, they ask if the Ferengi represent the Chinese. The Ferengi represent the outcast. It's the person who lives among us that we don't fully understand. Which, it seems like he thinks is like a, like, let Star Trek off the hook. But I think is like, yeah, I think that's why it just gives me, like, the general ick, is it's like, this feels like so many distressing stereotypes. All, it's not like if you put enough distressing stereotypes together, suddenly it's, like, no longer a distressing stereotype. It's more just, like, the reason you feel gross watching it changes from second to second, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And, like, I have to say that this is, I feel, like, common, especially for this era of Star Trek, because I'm going to be honest, I feel the same way about Klingons. Like, I feel like the sort of amalgamation of, like, racist stereotypes is sort of, like, for me, feels very, it's, like, scary African plus, like, racist, you know, Far East stereotypes sort of jammed into one in a way that I think a lot of the later shows try to really work on expanding beyond a sort of racist caricature. But I think it is still, like, sort of, I feel like, rooted in that in a way that, like, I don't know if you can ever totally step away from, you know, as much as, again, I'm always happy to see a Klingon character because that is another black actor who is employed and getting their SAG.
Often not. Very, very frequently not.
Very frequently not.
Very frequently people in blackface.
Now, now there are black people and other people of color. In the 60s, definitely people in black and brown face, which is, and a bunch of the movies, which is, like,
in
again,
this show,
like,
in this show too.
Oh no.
Like, a lot, a lot, a lot. Worf's son, played by a white child.
No, are you shitting me? Oh, no. Oh,
yeah,
no.
This is a conversation that we're going to have.
Anyway, so, yeah. A whole bunch of stereotypes in a lot of these beloved Star Trek people, which I'm just like, This is what happens when you have a writer's room that is just like, you are all
wasps.
White. Yeah. Like, thank you. You're all like wasps that have moved to the same two Ivy Leagues, and you're writing sci-fi, and there's not a person who's not a white cishet Christian dude in the writer's room.
Yeah.
And it's just, and because the fact that everyone's like, oh, this is fine, is outrageous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially considering that, like, in the case of the Ferengis, like, the, like, greedy Jewish Persian trope goes back to, like, the Middle Ages. So it's not a, like, how could we have known? It was a, like, this is baked into the, like, Western canon in a lot of really unfortunate ways, but, like, someone could have told you not to do this.
Right. Yeah. It would have... Well, sorry. So I do, I guess, maybe retracting a little bit on the wasps accusation, because in the sort of, you know, stereotypes section of the Wikipedia page, one of the Deep Space Nine writers says that the creative team, several of whom were Jewish, were aware at the time that many saw the Ferengi as Jewish stereotypes, and they attempted to mitigate it.
I think that's in Deep Space Nine, though.
Right.
Because that's where we get a lot of, like, fleshing out of the Ferengi people beyond a, like, cringy trope.
Right.
I think for the Next Generation, it's all waspy white dudes.
Yeah.
I think in a way that something like this makes abundantly clear. Like, no, other shows really work on that and, like, you know.
Yeah, I think something that I saw, I'm trying to find it. It's that in 2007, someone writing for the National Review was like, this is racist and anti-Semitic. And I'm like, you literally can't get a more like scathing critique than someone who writes for the National Review calling it racist and anti-Semitic. Like, that is not a person who cares about anti-Semitic tropes, and they're calling you out for it. So...
I mean, this is real blatant, you know, and maybe part of it is because it feels like the way that the goblins in Harry Potter feel. I just like put space goblins in my notes, partly because this episode, the second half, is the two thirds of this episode is just like weird D&D fantasy trope. Like, we have a wizard, we have some goblins, you have Riker, who's just like, I'm here, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah. I don't know. And the line about them, like, tasting the gold of the comm badges, I was just like, I literally just like, ugh.
Yeah, totally. Same.
Like, I was just like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Yeah. In episode 5 of your fucking show.
Yeah.
Just.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah. Truly some... real cringe. And I feel like some of the, like, cringy shit didn't actually... There's, like, some even more cringy shit that didn't even make it to the episode. So I mentioned that, like, positively, what a freak Gene Roddenberry was.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So one of the people working on this show, when they're talking about developing the Ferengi, apparently Gene Roddenberry went on a 25-minute... spiel about how he wanted the Ferengi to have like giant cod pieces, about like all of the sexual positions they could go through, and this dude is literally like, this is a family show on 7 o'clock on network television on a Saturday, we can't literally use any of that. And I'm like, what?
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. And I mean, animal-like sexual urges are a trope of so many racist tropes, so I'm just kind of like, you really were just about to pile it all on there.
I know.
So yeah, I know that obviously folks like Armin Shimmerman have done work in later shows to make this less two-dimensional, but this is... almost feels worse than the last episode because the Ferengi are a regular character in the canon.
Yeah. Yeah. They were like, no, that was good. Let's keep them coming. Our new best frenemies.
Yeah. And like a thing that I read a couple different things on the internet about this to be like, this is clearly not just me, but I just wanted to make sure. And someone brings up a point that a lot of the actors that play reoccurring Ferengi characters, most of them are played by Jewish actors, which makes it feel worse.
Yeah.
I'm like, again, glad people are working and getting the Actors Guild health insurance. And like, obviously, like Armin Zimmerman has put a lot of thought and effort, I think, into making Ferengis more complex characters than like anti-Semitic tropes.
Right.
But it's, I'm still like, that's real unfortunate though.
I know.
I'm just like, the optics of that is not great.
Yeah, totally. Welcome to Editorials, where we rant about stuff. This is the first, but not by any measure the last time that we need to talk about the fact that the firewalls on Federation computers are apparently paper thin.
Oh my god, this is also my first thing. I could not believe what I was seeing. This is such a the internet isn't a real thing for like a majority of people yet plot point. Because it's not password protected. There's not an ad blocker. It's just you're on the enterprise Wi-Fi. You can go through all of their databases. Like, what?
And like, you know, the Federation loves sharing, but like you guys, you still like really, you need two-factor authentication, you know, like
at the very least.
I get kind of that they're like being hacked by, it seems like a god, because it's not actually the Ferengi downloading the stuff, right? It's the planet.
Yeah.
But still. Alarms should have been going off well before they actually made it through to...
There was a pop-up notification being like, someone has accessed your Wi-Fi and is going through the entire Starfleet library.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, I was just like, wow, this is a thing you would write if you're like, if computers are still sort of a sci-fi plot and not a thing that exists in your life. Sort of along these lines, shout out to the Ferengi, who we see on screen is A, super close up, and B, has maybe their background blurred because he knows about security when on a video call.
Yeah.
You have no idea what's going on behind him.
Yeah.
What's going on in the scene, where he is. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
I'm like, the Ferengi definitely have a password protected two-factor whatever it's called.
Yeah.
That you have to access via money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So glad to see some internet security up.
Truly. Oh my gosh, I know. I think we actually already talked about my other rant, so do you have anything else?
This is probably another thing where it's like, we're still trying to figure it out. But these weird, awkwardly, mildly sexual moments between Crusher and Picard are real weird.
They feel so, like, shoved in. Because it's like, at least once an episode, we have to have this, like, let's build some sexual tension thing. And I'm like, this is not how you do this, you know? No. I don't know.
Is it to make Picard seem less gay? Because, like... That's the only, because you're right, it doesn't fit into the times that we've seen in the past couple episodes, it doesn't really fit. And it's always real awkward. And I'm like, is it because you have this attractive French dude who has a British accent and you don't want him to feel like he's a homosexual? Because that's the only reason I can feel like they're shoehorning this stuff in.
If I had to guess, I think it's so that we can have... Because there's some drama around, like, Picard being responsible for, like, Crusher's ex's death. Not ex, whatever, you know, her deceased husband's death. So, like, maybe it's supposed to be, like, tension. I don't know. Or maybe it's people love romance and, like, nobody else on this ship is doing a thing besides vaguely Riker and Troy, who, like, I think have no chemistry. So maybe they're just, like, searching for it wherever they can find it.
I guess.
I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not quite sure either. But yeah, I feel like I had to just be like, but why?
Yeah, I know. Totally. Welcome to Advertisements, where I remind you that you can support this show. The easiest way to find all of the ways that you can support our show is by going to #ruthless.com/supportourwork, where there's like a bullet point breakdown of the financial and non-financial ways that you can help us make this work, help me pay my bills. This is what I do full time. If you're new here, this making podcasts, my whole gig. So if you like what we've got going, you know, check that out. It's in the show notes. Cool. Thanks.
Yeah. And that's also the reason why this is the only ad you're going to hear in this episode, because we are 100% listener supported. So you will not have to hear a jarring, terrible ad at the beginning, middle, or end of this podcast besides us asking you to please support us.
Yeah. We're just two queer weirdos standing in front of an audience of who knows how many people asking you to join our Patreon. Which, you know, is non-hierarchical, so you can join at the lowest tier and still get access to all of the things. Okay, moving on. Welcome to the health and science section, where we talk about science and history and research that we did.
I have some trivia.
Okay.
So, first episode with the Ferengi. Maybe you saw this too. They were supposed to be like the villain of the show, of the series, sort of how like Klingons were in the original show. And then they were like, oh, this actually isn't scary. Nope, let's axe that idea.
Yeah.
Which was a good move, I
think. Yeah. It's funny that they were supposed to be scary, because like the direction that they were given seemed to be act like a pack of rabid chihuahuas. And yeah, like, there's really not anything scary about that. They're like at best a minor annoyance. So
I know. It's so weird. This episode is just such a weird episode.
Yeah.
And then my last bit of trivia, which is going all the way back to our first point of this episode, which is the Ferengi ship was apparently based on a horseshoe crab.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. I was getting sea creature.
It is very, yeah, it is very, I said Pokemon, that's not what I'm trying to say. It is very, like, crustacean.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, all right, the only thing I had here is just that we've met two gods in five episodes, which is, like, even though I think this one is, like, technically a computer?
I honestly, that's why I'm, like, this episode feels so much more like a fantasy. Like, there's a dude in a cloak who's basically a wizard.
And actually, Riker has three gods in five episodes. Because you can't tell me those space jellyfish that can manifest anything are not also gods. So dude, the jellyfish, and Q.
Yeah, maybe people are just taking inspiration from fantasy. Because, again, Riker solves a riddle that he didn't even know he was being asked.
Yeah.
Like, and again, the Ferengi are, as opposed to being intimidating, are just sort of like, all right, I guess these goblins have showed up also.
Right.
And this wizard is here to test all of us, question mark?
Right.
And it's just like, what?
I know.
Okay.
I also am not sure that it matters if the portal is like AI or not, because the powers that it has are the powers of a god, so I think you can have an AI god.
I mean, yeah, if the crystals are not attracting demons, lol. If the crystals are storing power of some kind, and it would make sense that maybe underneath this planet's surface is like a giant supercomputer that is,
right,
and that is the sort of face of the it's the clippy of the yeah. God, is that that's really dating me as an old person? whatever. Yeah, that is the inner the front interface of this computer is this wizard.
Yeah, yeah, I think right because like it's telepathic, it's you know telekinetic. Like you know, I feel like God is like more a job title than it is anything mystical. So like if it acts like a god, then it is a god.
Yeah, and I often feel like, which happens a lot in sci-fi, I think, is sometimes it's like, as opposed to in fantasy, you're like, it's magic hand-waving. You're just like, it is a really advanced computer. And it's like, okay, all yeah. right. Yeah, sure. Jedis have cells that make them have Jedi powers and not that they're space wizards. Okay.
Look, if anyone wants to have a fight about whether Star Wars is sci-fi or fantasy, I'm always here to argue that it is high fantasy and has nothing to do with science whatsoever.
Yeah, it's like high fantasy wearing the cloak, LOL, of sci-fi.
Yeah, it's just space wizards.
Yeah, and this and Star Trek is not usually... It's usually pretty sci-fi, but yeah, this is very much like, this is a fantasy app.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. All right. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode. In 2 weeks, we will be back with the next episode, which is called Where No One Has Gone Before.
Uh-oh, theme song drop, title drop, whatever that's called.
Yeah, check the show notes for everything. And until next time,
to beam up.